Hey, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is our bonus review episode, special Tuesday edition, and we're going to be reviewing Doctor Strange today. I'm Brian.
I am Daryl.
Daryl, that's a weird voice. We haven't heard you since Civil War, buddy.
For the 60-second review.
Yeah, for
of
the
Civil
60
War.
Second. Right. Yeah, all right. So, you know, as you guys hear, Daryl's here with me today. Johnny is living it up in the lap of magicalness. In Walt Disney World. He already saw it. He gives positive reviews. We'll get his take when he gets back. Real quick, just three words to describe Doctor Strange.
Good and strange.
Okay, you can do one more descriptive one. And
good and very good and very strange.
Very good and very strange. All right. Cool. I'm gonna go with trippy.
That's a good word.
Good. And I'm going to use two, Dark City, to describe it.
Yes.
Or scratch that, tuning.
Tuning.
Yeah, because in Dark City, that's what the guys did. They tuned the city and that kind of stuff.
Okay, yes. I that part of the show, of the movie, was very, very, very trippy.
Yeah.
In a very good way, though.
Yeah, all right. So, I mean, we're just hopping right in. Obviously, you guys know this is Marvel Studios. It's like the 13th or 14th film. We're heavy into phase four now.
Is phase four, three?
Three or four, three or whatever. Four. I mean, we're deep in, right? I have to say, as far as origins go, I feel like this was probably the best origin story so far, just because of how quickly they got to the story. Previously, I think Ant-Man was the best origin, but they took a little too long to get to, you know, the last half hour of action. The last hour of this movie, hour 10, is, you know, just a big mystical fight throwdown.
Right.
Through the streets of New York and Hong Kong and, you know, wherever they happen to go. What did you think?
I agree as far as the origin part. The one thing I thought was interesting is, as far as Benedict Cumberbatch, he made me actually want to see a little bit of more of Stephen Strange prior to him,
yeah,
his journey. But from a movie standpoint, I do understand that getting that out of the way was better for the movie experience.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, so what I think is weird, too, is so, you know, Doctor Strange is an interesting character. He's been around for freaking ever. Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, you know. But in you know, early in his development as a character and everything, it was a lot of, you know, He crashed his car because he was drinking, that kind of thing. You know, Tony Stark was the alcoholic. The cinematic universe seems to shy away from that, right? The use of alcohol in that kind of quote unquote personal demon, which made his car crash. You know, obviously, okay. First off, we're gonna have spoilers. Just, you know, we'll try to go light on them, but anyway, that made his car crash and everything seem way more his fault. You know, and you know, way more because he was completely in control of what he was doing, and he still wrecked his car in his hands. I don't know how you feel about that, but I was kind of like, I don't think it took away from, well, I do think it took away from it, actually. Like, I think it took away from just kind of how tragic it was, because here he was driving his Lambo through super curvy streets way faster than he needed to, passing people, and then, you know, it's like, come on, dude, like, you're a freaking doctor. Use some restraint.
But at the same time, I think, because one thing I do agree with you as far as how Marvel tends to shy away from things like that, good or bad. I don't know if they do that just to kind of get it more kid friendly. I'm not sure. Even though some of the other things they deal with are quite, you know, mature. So yeah. I don't see that why they would cut that out.
I mean, the movie opens with a beheading of all things, you know?
Yeah.
So.
So as far
by religious zealots, no less. I mean, come on.
As far as Doctor Strange and his origins, I will be the first to tell you, those are one of the comics that I really have never read.
Most of my interaction with Doctor Strange has come through Daredevil, Spider-Man, or, you know, the occasional Avengers Fantastic Four thing where he would show up. I will say this, the current Doctor Strange series is awesome. It's the art's beautiful. The story's really, really cool. It's well worth the read. I think actually, if you guys are listening to this, we're recording the Saturday after it came out. So what is, or the Sunday after it came out. So we're November 6th. Comixology has a sale going on. So if you're listening to this, you know, around the time it came out, definitely check that out. But he's definitely an interesting character. You know, I had some concerns going into this one that I haven't had of maybe some of the other ones. Mainly because it's my feelings towards magic. You know, I love the Harry Potter movies, don't get me wrong, but like, I feel like magic is like the worst kind of crutch in storytelling. It's like time travel. It's a horrible crutch in storytelling. And they use both in this movie. But I feel like everything was really well done. It was super well written. What was the guy's name? Scott
Derrickson.
Yeah. Scott Derrickson, the director who, you know, we were looking up at some of the stuff he did. You know, he's done that Supernatural thing. So like, there was that vibe of like suspense and like, you know, you're kind of like, wait, what's gonna, like, you know, when the three zealots show up and it's like, wait, he doesn't even know how to barely do any magic. How is he gonna survive this? And it was a cool scene, right? Because he didn't necessarily survive because of his power.
And one of the things that's funny that Cassilia says is when he picks up, it's kind of like a lantern or vase, or
yeah,
you know, like how I said vase.
Yeah.
And he backs away for a second. He says, you don't know how to use that, do you?
Yeah.
I thought that was excellent.
As far like, as no.
As far as magic, what your point is, I do believe that sometimes magic becomes a crutch because there's no second half of it as far as payment for when you're using this. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of one of the things Baron Mordu
the
says.
The whole time, right? The bill comes due.
The bill comes due. And I love magic in stories. I especially like magic in one of my favorite authors is Jim Butcher. And in his Harry Potter, Harry Dresden universe, there is always an after effect of using magic. And I think that's what you have to have with something like magic. There has to be, to quote his word, Baron Mordu's words, the bill comes due.
Yeah. And to be honest, like we got that like very clearly in the second after credit scene about using magic for personal gain and all of that and how that bill comes due. Was really, really good. You know, we'll get into like more probably here in a minute or two, but I really want to talk about the casting. And mainly the Ancient One to start, right? There was a lot of crap about Tilda Swinton getting cast in the role and not going to an Asian actor and, you know, oh, well, he's Asian in the comics and like, you know, they made it into a woman. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, that's great. Mordu was a white man in the, you know, in the comics, and he's played by Chiwetel Ejiofor. But I can't imagine anyone else in that role after watching her.
She was amazing. And, okay, one of my favorite movies is another movie about mysticism and magic, Constantine. Yeah, I know it gets a lot of flack, but the one with Keanu Reeves from 2005. She plays Gabriel in that movie, and she brings such a regality to her role in both Constantine and this, where to your point, I see her as the Ancient One.
Yeah, and I think one of the best parts about her as the Ancient One in this was the ability to show the heartbreak that she experienced and not only how she had to use her powers and, you know, the Dark Dimension powers, but just knowing of like she failed Mads Mikkelsen's character. She failed Doctor Strange, you know, and in entirety, she failed the multiverse in a lot of ways with the compromises she had to make. But at the end of the day, man, that was just a powerful, powerful performance. It had comedy. It had the suspense. It had, you know, the wise Yoda moments. And then, you know, again, that heartbreak. I think that when people look back on this, or at least I'm hopeful that, you know, people recognize that and like, okay, this was the right perfect actor for the role. That's why we should cast people.
Cast them for their abilities and what they bring to the role, not necessarily to check off a box or in some situations to say, well, it was like this in the comics, so we have to keep this person in the universe.
The new DC movie universe, right? Perry White was always a white man, right? In everything ever, Perry White, until Lawrence Fishburne. And to be honest, for the role that the way they have Perry White, Lawrence Fishburne is perfect for it because, you know, the over the top, like yelling out headlines, you know, first off, that's how no newsroom editor would ever act. But like Fishburne makes it work. Right. And like, again, so for that character and the way that character is written, good job, DC, you know, and right. I think with this one, like the way this character was written and the choices that she had to make and the sacrifices she had to make. I don't think a man would have been able to pull that off. And secondly, you know, give me another actor who you could have slipped into that role.
I know one of the ones that I think would have done a good job, and people would say, hey, it's kind of catering to, you know, the comics or what have you, is Ken Watanabe. I know he was.
Yeah.
And again, I love him as an actor. He would have brought a different type of power to it, but to the point, again, Tilda Swinton, I think, was perfect for the role, and she just showed her just her abilities as an actress. Yeah. Was what she did.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted Ken Watanabe in the movie, like you could have replaced him with Mordu, or you right. could have put him as Caecilius, or even as Wong. You know, those are characters where he could have like taken the place of that character. But again, I don't feel like, and again, I've enjoyed the movies that I've seen Ken Watanabe in, but I don't think he has the acting chops to pull that off. And just plain and simple,
I think he can.
It's not because he's Asian. It's right. just because of his wheelhouse as an actor is a certain thing, and it's not what they needed for this.
I do see what you're saying. I think he brings that same presence, and that's what I'm going for. She brings several different things to it, as you said. She brings the right. comedy. She brings the drama and suspense, and she also brings. I don't know about the comedy how it would go with him.
Right.
To be honest, I think everything else he could touch. Or he could compare to her, especially that gravitas as an actor. Some actors just have.
Did you just say gravitas?
Yes, I said gravitas. But again, I didn't have any issues with her casting in the first place. Yeah. And after seeing the movie, I think she just goes to show that, you know, stop with the check boxes.
And
if somebody brings something good to the role, you know, give him the role.
And that's perfect. And I think that's a great segue into Chiwetel Ejiofor as Mordu. Mm-hmm. He was my favorite part of the movie. You know, I think all the best hero-villain stories come from they were friends first, and then there was that turn. And I couldn't help but thinking about, like, season 4 of Smallville, where that was the last season where we got Clark and Lex on screen at the same time for the rest of the series. And, how when that friendship turned to an antagonistic relationship, how good those two actors were. And as good an actor as, you know, Michael Rosenbaum was and could carry Tom Welling through a lot of that early stuff. I mean, we have two of the best actors going today with Ejiofor and Cumberbatch. I can't wait for Doctor Strange 2.
And that was my exact sentiment when I saw the second after credit scene.
Yeah.
Is yes, you know it's coming, partially because, again, we are in the comic book world. We know some of these things. But just as from a narration standpoint, you could see as the movie went on, just here and there, some of the looks that Baron Mordu gave when the Ancient One would say something or when Stephen Strange would do something.
Do something, right?
Right.
Because, you know, Mordu had been there for a while, and, you know, he was progressing at the speed that he needed to progress. And then Strange shows up, and it's like, what? You know? And it's like, wait a second. This guy's been here for a fraction of the time that I have. How is he getting away with this?
Right. And it's like the, hey, I'm pretty smart. And then this super genius comes and just blows you away.
Right. But no, in like his, the way he portrayed using magic and the way he, you know, the way he worked as Strange's teacher as well, as the second teacher, you know, almost the teacher's assistant, if you will, or, you know, the TA, because he was still a student at the time. You know, he did that really good job of like taking what he was learning and sharing it with Strange. Now, Strange listened to almost none of what he said. But, you know, it was still there and good and fun. And just, man, it was such a good performance.
Yeah, they're back and forth where, again, Strange is the reckless. And it kind of ties into his car accident in a way, because he is so focused on the prize, your eyes on mm-hmm. the prize, he doesn't always see the road in front of him.
Right.
And it was the same way with the magic, in the sense of, hey, you know what, let me do this, but you might want to look after the spell, because the warnings are afterwards.
Oh yeah,
I love that line,
which was hilarious. And like the look he gave him, right? You know, it's like that rock s eyebrow, you know, that kind of went up. But so Cumberbatch, I'm so happy Marvel waited for him to be available to make this movie. We had talked about maybe some of the other actors, like Patrick Dempsey had, you know, expressed interest. There was rumors that Joaquin Phoenix last year at Comic-Con was going to be announced as Doctor Strange and then didn't. There have been other actors, you know, who've kind of been in there for the role. I'm not always the biggest fan of what Cumberbatch does. I loved him in The Imitation Game. I tolerated him in Star Trek. Sherlock for me is hit or miss. I loved him in this role.
I absolutely loved him. I remember hearing the first rumors of if he was going to be the role, if he was going to take the role or not. And I know there were some scheduling issues. First moment I heard it, I said, this guy's going to be perfect for
mm-hmm.
it. And again, I liked him in Star Trek Into Darkness. There were some issues with that movie that I believe they were more out of his control.
And it wasn't him. It was, but like making him con. And Johnny and I have gone over this ad nauseum. But like, you know, if he would have stayed as John Harrison, then I think that role probably would have gone a different way for him. But I think he handled the essentially the three sides of Doctor Strange that like he needed to handle, right? The, you know, megalomaniacal, ego-driven super surgeon
Tony Stark,
the down on your luck, completely and literally broken, figuratively and literally broken man Bruce Banner, mm-hmm. and then the Sorcerer Supreme. Like, honestly, I mean, like, even though, like, yes, it ends with there's no Sorcerer Supreme protecting
Earth
at the moment.
Which I like that decision.
That was a great thing that they didn't just thrust him in the role. But, like, you know, he's getting there. And, you know, he at the end, I mean, the other two, without those other two early parts, he wouldn't have been able to, you know, come up with the idea for that time loop and come up with the idea to, you know, put Dormammu through what they did. And, you know, and if he hadn't listened, you know, and learned, and for the first time he learned from a mistake, because it was the first time he really made mistake.
Right.
So, and I think because of who Benedict Cumberbatch is, and because of the crop of English actors that he's come from, right? You have him, you have Tom Hardy, you have Tom Hiddleston, you have, you know, just a bunch of guys in that age range who were, Dan Stevens, you know, mm-hmm. I'll put him in that role too, who were too young to be student or too old to be students in Harry Potter and too young to be teachers in Harry Potter. So they kind of had to go out and find their own path. Mm-hmm. And most of them have led to Marvel for, you know, Tom Hardy went to Bane, but like, you know, I mean, Hiddleston is, you know, the greatest villain in the Marvel universe. Some would argue probably the best, like, you know, quote unquote treasure of the Marvel universe. Now you have Cumberbatch. Dan Stevens is going to play Legion on the FX show, looks great. Then villains in this one. I mean, there's really one big bad, and then Dormammu is kind of the Thanos, like, you know, in the overarching, like, oh well, he's the one really pulling the strings kind of thing. Mads Mikkelsen is in the span of a month going to play, you know, one of the worst villains ever. And, you know, how do you pronounce it? Cassilius. And then he's going to turn around. He's going to play, you know, Jen Arrow's dad in Rogue One. So, you know, I mean, like, what can't this guy do?
And let's not forget,
Hannibal ever.
And he was Lashif in what's still my favorite Bond movie, Casino Royale.
Yeah. Yep.
The guy's a great actor. And one of the things I know you hear a lot is Marvel is light on the storytelling for villains.
Mm-hmm.
Cassilius, there was one main issue to me is with Cassilius is they had a chance, especially when he's talking to Doctor Strange in the New York Sanctum, where he starts talking about the dark dimension and the whole living forever vibe thing. I thought they were going to give more to his character.
Yeah.
And you could see it because in that scene, there's actually tears coming down his eyes. So he's mm-hmm. reliving or thinking of something that he's lost. And just like the Ancient One said, he came a broken man, which, again, that's everybody that comes there is broken in some way, shape, or form. I thought they could have given a couple of extra minutes, whether it be that scene or another scene, where they could have explained better where he's coming from, more than just, you know, the antagonist to the Ancient One, or seeing that, hey, this world, everybody, we always die. What if we could get to a world that never dies? I thought they could have added a little bit more in that regard to him.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I do think he was a serviceable villain.
Yeah. He was the perfect villain to get started. You right. know? And then we had Rachel McAdams in this movie. She did great, you know, with her role. She, the surprise that she showed when she saw the astral form, and, you know, the loving concern she showed for Strange until he completely pushed her away, and probably one of the biggest dick moves you've ever seen someone do. Right. But then, you know, they were a thing. They handled this like I thought the first Iron Man movie handled this very well, is the relationship between Tony and Pepper. Like, they handled it really well, right? It's like, they may end up as a love interest type of a thing. They probably won't. But, like, you know, it was still kind of the will they won't they was there, without us getting beaten over the head of Vicky Vale getting drugged and taken back to the Batcave.
Or season 4 of Arrow.
Well, season 3. Yeah. No, I know what you're saying. But yeah, so I think she was great in the role that she played as the Doctor and his friend and, you know, former lover. And, you know, it was, oh God, and she's so hot.
she's honestly one of my favorite actresses. And, you know, she was great in movies like About Time, I think it was the Time Traveler's Wife.
Yeah.
She has such a wonderful range.
Mean Girls. I mean, come on. That was greatest role ever, right? Now, I've never seen The Notebook, so I have no idea. But, you know,
again, very
you've
good
seen The
that.
Notebook because
yes.
you
I've seen it once.
Movies.
Yes, I've watched those movies. It's not one of those things like Love Actually or Notting Hill. Okay. I'm going to lose my geek card in a minute, so.
Yeah, it's all right. And then Benedict Wong was so good as the librarian and as Wong. And, you know, when he's like, oh, you better not steal a book, or this is the list of things that'll happen to you. And he's like, thank you for the rules. Thank you for the this. Thank you for the threat of bodily harm.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you see is hands reaching through portals, stealing books. Yeah. You know, and he turns around. He's like, what? What? What was that? And it's like, oh, God. And then, you know, just his presence was so good.
He was the straight man to kind of, like, when you have that, you know, that duo where you have the guy who's the snarky, you know, sarcastic guy, but you have to have the straight man. And for the most of the movie, that's who Wong was. No humor. Do you ever smile? Do you ever laugh? And yeah. And I thought
people think I'm very funny. And then he had that snarky return.
Does that work for you?
But no. And, you know, I mean, most recently he was on the Marco Polo series on Netflix,
which he's great in that.
And then obviously he played one of the scientists at the Jet Propulsion Lab in The Martian.
On Martian.
To help bring Matt Dillon home, or Damon. I always call him Matt Dillon. I do that all the time. But no, he was good. Like, okay, so we've talked about the acting. We have to talk about the look and feel, because this was a completely different look and feel from any of the other Marvel movies, right? You know, even though we're dealing with superpowers and things like that, the other Marvel movies definitely have that sense of this is the real world. Like, you know, we totally took the red pill for those. Like, this is one where we took the blue pill and we're still inside the Matrix.
Yeah, I completely
it's
agree
so
with
trippy.
That. Yes, it's when we talk about Marvel movies having their stamp, one of the first Marvel movies I saw that kind of departed from that, but to your point, mm-hmm. stayed in the real world, was Ant-Man. It was a completely different movie than all the superhero fighting to save the world. It was a heist flick.
Well, it was this self-contained, you know,
right.
Ocean's 11, Italian Job type, which, you know, flick.
Yeah. I love that. And the same thing for Doctor Strange is, you know, you've never really had magic in the Marvel movies. In the Thor movies, they say, what do they
say? It's mystical, you know, the Thor movies, but it's not necessarily magical.
Right.
So,
and because he says in the first Thor, you know, you call it magic, we call it science. Right. I come from a place where they're one and the same. This is the magic side
of that. And I agree. I think the other big thing is, whereas Iron Man 1 was a self-contained movie, Ant-Man was a self-contained movie, while this was a self-contained story, we definitely got a view of the larger picture that magicians and magic, or I'm sorry, sorcerers and magic play in, you know, that part of the Marvel universe. I mean, Guardians. Yes, Thanos is a huge, you know, shadow of that film and that part of the MCU. But we haven't had a mix yet with the Guardians and the regular MCU, right?
Right.
The after credits scene, you know, as funny as the what was Thor doing during Civil War thing, we got the answer right here.
Right.
You know, he's looking for Odin. They know Loki, you know, hit him away somewhere.
Right.
So I think Strange is in Thor Ragnarok, if I remember correctly.
I believe so. Again, I don't know how big of a part he has in that.
I do definitely look forward to seeing him and the Hulk in a scene together, if at all possible. Please, please, please. But we're still talking about the look. Tangents within tangents.
That is actually a good segue into the world atop the world, the mirror world.
Yeah.
Or the mirror dimension, where they say, because one of the things I was concerned about is, how is all this magic going to happen?
And yeah, how are people not getting crushed by these buildings, like, folding in on one another?
Right.
Because in the beginning, where we see the Ancient One fighting the Zealots, you know, it's like, hey, wait a second here. Like, she just completely flipped everything on its axis. Like, how are the people not falling inside those buildings either? And it's the slightest, like, wall of glass that goes up that you don't even notice it until after they start talking about the mirror universe. And you're like, that was the beginning of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I tell you what, I know when the first trailer came out, you know, everybody talks about Inception and, oh, this looks like Inception. And you know what? It's Inception on steroids to me. It does a great job of, and especially in the climactic battle with Cassilius and the Ancient One, I was just sitting there watching it, just kind of going over in my head, just mapping out just all of these, you know, the intricate changes into the city, into platforms to jump, fight, run over. It was one of the more incredible, I want to say set pieces, but they're not set pieces, obviously. It's,
I think, you know, in the world of movie making today, the CG is still a set piece, you know.
That's a good
point. Like, it takes the time to create that and to, you know, make it, again, fold in on itself in ways that make sense. One of the things I really loved was that platform they ended up fighting on.
Right.
And how it just kind of formed from stuff around them, and it was that cool symbol. But I can't get over how much I enjoyed this movie, because I did not expect to like it so much. I put it in probably the top five. You know, for me, it goes back and forth between Guardians and Winter Soldier for the best one. I put Civil War right there at number three. But, you know, probably then for me, Ant-Man, because first off, I'm completely biased because of Paul Rudd. But I would put this after Ant-Man, you know. I'm interested to see if I'll think that after a second viewing, because this is one I'm definitely going to go and see in the theater again. But I don't know, like, you look at Captain America, the First Avenger. Of all the Marvel movies, it's probably the most rewatchable, where you can just sit down and, like, you know, you can catch it no matter what point in the movie it's in, or you can be like, hey, I just want to watch something, throw on First Avenger. I'm curious if this will hold up to subsequent viewings now that, you know, some of the, you know, pun intended magic has been revealed.
To me, we're very one in the same as far as our top two Marvel movies. Guardians of the Galaxy. I always still say Winter Soldier to me is overall the better movie. Not by much, but there's so much fun to be had in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
Both of those movies, I can watch at any time.
Mm-hmm.
I have kind of a three or four tier Marvel movie rating system. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those two obviously are one and two. Also up there, the first Iron Man, the original Avengers, and Ant-Man. Ant-Man's up there as well, and I agree. This Doctor Strange is right there with that Ant-Man, mm-hmm. Iron Man, self-contained story, but at the same time part of the bigger whole. I'm looking forward to seeing how well it holds up. I think it will hold up very well, just because there's that seriousness, there's that humor. You know, there is that building a world that we haven't seen before in the MCU.
And I hate puns, and I have to use another one. It's timeless. You know, it does. It feels timeless, right? There's no identifying factor of what time frame it is.
Right.
You know, we know it's after Age of Ultron and Civil War. We know that much, right? But as far as like, you know, other than the Surface tablet that he's using, you know, this could be any time in history.
Right. And I'm one of those that time usually doesn't bother me in movies, except if it's something like Iron Man, when you build a legion of robots in 10 days. The Iron Man 2, that was, and again, that's one of the lowest tier Marvel movies for me.
Yeah.
But this one is, and we know a lot of time has gone by, especially even after the climax of the movie, because mm-hmm. After credit scenes, Mordu says, "I've been gone many months."
Yep.
So we know it's been a while.
Yeah, there's been more training, more sorcering, if you will. but yeah. All right. So I think we're running up against it here for about how long we wanted this to be. Out of 10 Eyes of Agamotto, what do you rate this?
I'd give it a 7.5.
Yeah.
Right around a 7.5, 8. Again, it's not Civil War, actually, I think it actually, as a movie itself, mm-hmm. works a little bit better than Civil War, even though I had a ton of fun with Civil War. But there's a couple issues that I had with mm-hmm. again, the Cassilius character could have been done a little better.
Yeah.
One or two scenes where the humor I didn't think was necessary.
Yeah.
But, again, the cast, tremendous. The set pieces, amazing. And, again, I think it's going to be one of those rewatchable movies. Timeless classics.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about classic, but it'll be a timeless Marvel in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, I'd give it an 8. You know, it's rocking a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. So, I mean, critics are liking it. Fans are liking everyone. You know, Johnny, like I said, he went and saw it on Friday the day it opened. He texted me. David, who is going to be on for, Thursday, since Johnny's still on vacation, he texted me. He loved it. I definitely liked it a lot. I don't think I loved it, but I definitely really, right. really liked it, which to me, it's money well spent.
Oh, yeah. So. And it's 100% a movie I'll go see again.
Yeah. All right. Well, cool. All right. Well, before we go, I just want to make a quick announcement about the show. We now have a Patreon page. And you can go to patreon.com/infamouspodcast to get there. We have a couple just tiers of becoming a member of the show. Which are pretty fun, and we think, you know, you guys will like it. And we will be, for patrons, we'll actually start posting episodes early on Patreon. So check that out. Daryl, where can they find you online?
So I have a couple Twitter accounts, but you would want to follow me at Dow of Geek. Dow with a D, not the T. And Facebook as well, Daryl Jasper.
It's Dow of Geek on Instagram too, right?
Yes, it's Dow of Geek on Instagram as well.
Cool. And as always, I'm at Brian Tudor on most social networks, and you can find the show online, infamouspodcast.com. You know, whatever podcatcher you're listening to us on, that's where we are. But you can find our shows on iTunes, Google, and Stitcher if you are ever looking for a new player. And lastly, we are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as Infamous Podcast. We have new episodes every Friday. We have these occasional Tuesday episodes as bonuses when there's just stuff that we really, really want to highlight. And Johnny's not here today, but you can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Johnny Podorf. And he's on Facebook as well. And there's links to click in our About Us page to get there. All right, man. Well, thanks for filling Johnny's chair.
Strange out.
All right, guys. Well, whenever you're listening to this, day, night, evening, weekend, whatever it is, I hope you enjoyed it. And make sure you check us out every Friday. Later.